Hello, everybody. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Welcome to our March Artful Asking Success Club topic call. I absolutely love these calls. I love these calls each month, and I love this series that we are doing now called Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success. Drama down, dollars up. That's what my 19-year-old son, excuse me, drink here, has turned it into. Dollars, drama down, dollars up. I love that. Reminder that all these calls are recorded, and I'll send it out to you after the call. And if you invested in a 12-pack with me, you get all of the past recordings this year open as well. So I've tried to make it relatively inexpensive and easy for you to grab this year's whole mindset series. Today is going to be a little bit different because I'm going to talk mindset as well as talk through my asking tool, my three-sentence asking tool, just so you have that as well. If you ever have any troubles, Kathy on my team, Kathy at marcyheim.com, is the one who takes care of subscriptions and things not getting through and all that kind of thing. I'm looking for Renee on the call. I don't see her yet, but I know some of you, for some reason, were getting blocked and these things were going into your spam. I have no idea how that works, but I'm sorry that that was happening, and I hope that we can figure out. If you suddenly aren't seeing me anymore, something's happened. We'll stop, we'll breathe. And it's really interesting. When I prepared for this call, I was building a fire in my fireplace. And now it's warm outside. The sun is shining in Wisconsin. The first day of spring has happened, and it's really been quite amazing here. The temperatures can vary so much in March, and it occurs to me that as the sun comes out or goes away, as the temperature gets warmer, cooler, it also impacts our emotions, how we're feeling about things, our energy levels, our mindset. So again, to just be aware of how all the environment around us, not just the people that say things to you or send you the email, but even the temperature, all of that impacts our mindset. And we are, of course, are always in charge. I create my life, we're in charge. But it does remind me of the gal who sat in front of the fireplace and said, give me heat, then I'll put in the wood. We know that's all silly. You're not going to have a fire without first putting the wood in and starting it, right? How silly. But yet, there are a lot of us that approach life that way. Let me see this, and then I'll see if I want to buy in. You know, let me see what's going to happen here first, and then maybe I'll dip my toe in the water and try it. Instead of just kind of saying, I'm the one that has to drive this process, I'm the one that does this. I create my life. So put in the wood, and then you'll get the heat out. Waiting for the heat or money or whatever to come in is not being in charge of what you're doing. It's not igniting. It's not sparking the flame that produces the heat. So it's not your boss's job. It's not your spouse's job. It's not your donor's job to put in that wood. It's yours. You create your life. So today I am planning to get you stirred up over money. This program is part of, as you know, of this year-long program called Dial Down the Drama. And I want to just give you a little foreshadowing of some other topics to come. They might shift around a little bit as I'm booking some special guests with these as well. But I'm going to do a talk on creating white space and protecting my time. I'm hearing from all of you that that is something that we need to do. We want to be there for our donors. We want to be there for our families. But we also want to have some space in our life. And I don't care what you fill it with. I don't care if you sit on the couch. I was at a conference last week, and she said, Marcy, I created some of that white space like you were coaching us around, and I just sat and stared into space. Hey, that's fine. But it's that white space for us to do what we need to do to rejuvenate and to protect ourselves. And there's also a topic coming up on the power of gratitude and generosity. I'm really excited about that one. So this whole year is filled with things that I'm approaching from both a mindset and a hands-on tool approach, because we spend precious time and energy engaged in emotions that just don't serve us, my friends. They drain us, they leave us tired, they leave us hopeless feeling, and they come at us from all of these different angles. And we waste precious moments lamenting about, oh, what if this, and what about that, and somebody feels this way, and oh my goodness, they just said this to me, and what about this outcome, and what if the granting program changes, and all of these what ifs that are outside our circle of influence. We can't do anything about them. So Stephen Covey was so wise about that. He said, focus on what you can influence. Don't put that energy in what he calls our circle of concern. And so often, the things that we get all fussed up about, when we actually have them happen or not happen, we kind of wonder, why did I wait so long to deal with this? Or why was I so fussed up about this in the first place? At the core of everything we do, raise money, be here on planet Earth, be in the fabric of planet Earth every day, there are ideas that we can embrace to make this journey better. And I want you, as we go through this session, to visualize in your mind some kind of dial. I don't care what it looks like, but see a dial that's got numbers on it, and see some kind of a tab or a turner on that dial. And I want you to visualize in your minds that you put your hand on that dial, and you can put it down to zero, or you can crank it up to 10, or if your dial goes to 20, you can, or if you've got an egg timer in front of you, a kitchen timer, and that thing cranks up to 60 seconds, but you control that dial. And when you're in a situation where you can feel it starting, I want you to visualize that dial and visualize yourself turning it up or turning it down, whatever you need at the moment at an emotional level to best handle the situation. Most of the time, it's turning that dial down. For some of us, it might be bringing that dial up a little bit to meet an energy level of our donors, or to meet a situational level with our boss where we need to be more assertive. But you control the dial. You crank it. Okay? Today we're talking about money. Woohoo! Money, money, money. Always sunny in a rich man's world. What a crazy song. That's an ABBA song. Money. And we don't like to talk about money. And my friends, we are in a money talking business. So it's really important today that we cue in to this whole idea of money. Today's program is in three sections. I'm going to talk about our money mindset to start with. Then I am going to talk about making an artful ask. And I'm going to end up with some quotes about money mindset, wanting the money, to leave you with today. So first, let's begin about some statements about money. Now, you're all on, and I'm going to go real quickly here. So you need a paper and pencil, or if you don't have it, just do this in your mind, and that's fine. Think about a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is, I really disagree with this. I disagree with this statement. 1, I 100% disagree with this statement. And 10 is, I 100% agree with this statement. So 1 is disagree, 10 is agree. And after I say them, just quickly say to yourself, okay, I'm at a 1 or a 10, or I'm somewhere in the middle. Money is the root of all evil. 1 or 10, somewhere in the middle. Most wealthy people probably did something bad or dishonest to get their money. I disagree with that. I agree with that. Having a lot of money will make me less spiritual or pure. Having a lot of money will make me less spiritual or pure. I 100% disagree with this. I 100% agree. I'm somewhere in the middle. Getting wealthy takes too much work and struggle. Having a lot of money is a big responsibility. realistically, chances are I'll never be wealthy. Achieving wealth is a matter of luck or fate, or sometimes inheritance. To become wealthy, you have to use people and take advantage of them. One, I really disagree with this statement. 10, I really agree. If I become wealthy, everyone will want something from me. I disagree with that. I really agree. If I have a lot of money, it means someone else is going to have less. If I have a lot of money, it means someone else is going to have less. Having excess money means you're greedy. Having excess money means you're greedy. If I really strive for wealth and don't succeed, I feel like a failure. Money isn't really that important to me. Money is really not that important. Money can cause a lot of problems. It's not right to make more money than my parents. You can't become wealthy doing exactly what you love. It takes money to make money. People should only have as much money as they need to live comfortably. People should only have as much money as they need to live comfortably. Striving for money and wealth can cause stress and health problems. It's just more difficult to become wealthy these days. I'm not smart enough or intelligent enough to become wealthy. I'm too old or too young to become wealthy. As a woman, it's much more difficult to become wealthy. I wish I didn't even have to deal with money. Wealth and money corrupts artistic and creative endeavors. So again, if you're joining the call, we're ranking these statements. One means I very much disagree with it. I disagree with the statement. It's not a truth. 10 means I very much agree with this statement. And of course, you can be somewhere in the middle. So 1, you disagree very much. 10, you agree. So I just said wealth corrupts artistic and creative endeavors. It's not right for me to be wealthy while others have nothing. If you're not born rich, chances are you'll never get rich. Wealthy people aren't really happy. I have some resentment towards wealthy people. Really think about that one. Really explore inside. I have some resentment towards extremely wealthy people. I'm already quite comfortable. I don't need to push myself. The only reason to work is to make money. If you're rich in love, help, and happiness, you really don't need money. There's no use earning a lot more money because I'll just have to pay more taxes. God will make me rich, poor, or middle class. Okay, I hope that you either jot it down or thought in your head how you feel about the statement. Here's the deal. The lower your score on all of those statements, the better, because all of these statements indeed represent some limiting and victim lack mindset. All of these money statements are things that we've been programmed to think and truly are not true. Truly are a situation of us being being told that there's a lot of guilt around having money, that there's greed involved in having money, that they focus on how financially successful you will be personally, and also I have found how this impacts my ability to raise major gifts, because I take these attitudes, whether I realize it or not, along with me on my calls and what I do every day in my life. These mindsets, my friends, were formed when we were very young, most of them. It's what we heard our parents say, clergy, the TV, peers, and it goes on and on. Things that we heard growing up. One of my workshop participants said, his father always said, "What do you think I am, made of money?" And I'm sure that if you take a minute to think about it, really think about it, you can remember exchanges about money in your childhood. Now, this is not about let's blame our parents for everything that's wrong in the world. No, I'm not talking about that at all. I mean, our parents and I as a parent right now, my boys just both left for spring break. Was that ever a money issue? I wanted to give them money for it. They wanted their independence to do the trip. Money became a real source of control. If I gave them money, then I could dictate what they did with it, whether or not I wanted to dictate what they did with it. There was, and I had to just say, hey, great, sleep in the back of the van. Have a nice night. You know, cool, great, wonderful, woo-hoo. Be happy to get you a hotel, kids. Nope, sleeping in the back of the van, Mom. Okay. Money is all mixed up in so much emotional stuff. And whether or not we're aware it's there, it's in our heads. When I do my workshops, I will put up this list of questions, and I'll rattle them off. Some of you may well have been in my workshops. Money doesn't grow on, and everybody yells out, trees! Money is the root of all evil, right? It's all right there. Think back of conversations around money growing up. Was it a source of joy in your home too? Or were there conversations around how are we going to pay for this? Money is scarce. Did you have points where I grew up in a real unique situation where my mom, even though she was a stay-at-home mom, my dad gave my mom a check out of his business, and she was expected to manage the household expenses. So Mom was always somebody who managed money, even though she was a stay-at-home mom. So I got a real empowering upbringing about the fact that I can have money and I can manage money. But I did have to get past the part that money doesn't come from men. Money isn't something a man gives you. Money is something that you have all of the power to earn. If you're in a situation where every time you ask your mom for money, she said, go talk to your dad. Dad has all the money. Again, these leave impressions on you. Take a minute and think back, if you will, about what some of your earliest memories are about talking about money in your home. It impacts not only your ability to raise major dollars, but also your impact to have major dollars in your own life and the kinds of conversations you have around money. I'm going to pick out just a few of these and talk about them a little bit more. So money is the root of all evil. God will make me rich, poor, middle class. I have a lot of faith-based clients, and I am a person of deep faith. But this is really one of the most misunderstood things we have out there. First off, it's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. And I'd say there that that's a real biblical support for saying how we raise money is really important. It's not about getting the money no matter how we do it. It's not about pushing somebody into an estate plan that really doesn't serve us, serve them, because then we will get their money. It's not about pushing somebody into a gift that's going to put them in a bad situation because we have the sales skills to do it. That's all the junk that goes out there that gives generosity and philanthropy a black eye. It's about working with that donor, sure, to find a gift that maybe they didn't think they could make, because we can help them with a planned giving vehicle that will allow them to do more, or because we can help them pass some of their own money mindsets. I've talked to older women who have millions and think they're going to run out of money for their health care. I'm not good at, what if I go into a nursing home? Some of those things we can help them with. Can you talk to somebody about your plan for supporting a nursing home stay? What are the options that you have? But the idea that it's the love of money that's evil, it's not money that's evil. And God gives us gifts so we can go out and use them to do good in the world. He gives us gifts so we can go out and maximize the potential of all of the gifts he's given us. Not that we just sit back and say, well, I guess God wanted me to be poor. That's really a victim mentality, and here you're blaming God for your circumstances. I don't think that's how he set this up. To my non-faith-based clients, just put it to the universe. The universe didn't put us here and dictate what we're going to do. The universe gave us opportunities, and how we embrace those opportunities is always our choice. The second one, to become wealthy, you have to use people and take advantage of them. There's a lot of stuff around, well, you know, they only got rich because blah, 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 blah. You can hear in the tone, you can hear that criticism in the tone. Oh, they only got rich because they're lucky, you know, or they only got rich because they screwed a bunch of people over. That's our own junk getting in the way. And I'm going to be real straight with you, friends. That's looking at ourselves. That's doing a self-assessment about where we are in our life, and we don't like the answer. Boy, I thought I would be here by this time. Gee, I thought my salary would be here by this time. Well, you know, the people that get those raises, they're the ones that are in all the time, you know, talking to the boss about what they've done. Well, maybe the boss wants to know what you're doing. What a concept. Maybe the person that communicates up more effectively gets a bigger raise. What a concept. So it's about our own self-assessment of where we are. I mean, one of mine for years, and I'm being really transparent with you all, one of mine for years was men are paid differently than women at the foundation. Well, when I went in and actually had a conversation with the president about where I was at with salary and why I was at that position and why Jim was making more, he told me very clearly, this is what Jim is doing at this. This is what you get to this point. You have these kinds of results. I'm happy to pay you that. My goodness, was that eye-opening. And I just thought it was because I was a woman and he was being, you know, one of those. Totally wrong. But it was real easy to just do what I was doing and blame that circumstance. So they're not dirty, rotten cheats just because they've been successful. They've probably made some decisions differently than we have. And I look at the wealthy people I've had a chance to be involved with. And often in my conversations getting to know them, when I'd say, tell me your story. Tell me how you started out with a few acres on a cranberry bog here and turned it into this really successful business. What was this about? I'm fascinated. And people love to tell you about their stories. And oftentimes you will hear them say some things like, well, then I had this bit of luck. Now really listen to that, because what they're really telling you is they'd been working in a focused, systematic way. They had a vision for where they wanted to go. They had already told you that. And this opportunity, they came along and they were right there ready to seize on it. Is that luck? Is that somehow the universe or God being special with them, that he hasn't or the universe hasn't been with you? I don't think so. I think it's the fact that they were on that track, this opportunity came along, and they were able to maximize on it. That they took time to study, to learn, to see what were the best decisions to make, to ask others for help and advice, and when that opportunity came along, they were ready to act. So it's not about luck. The next one I want to talk to you about is wealthy people aren't really happy. Wealthy people aren't really cultured. Wealthy people aren't really creative. You know, wealth sometimes dampens all these things. You know, either it's an either-or situation, right? Either you can be happy or you can be wealthy. Either you can be spiritual or you can be wealthy. Either you can be kind or you can be wealthy. Somehow if you're wealthy, you're unhappy, you're not spiritual, instead you're greedy, you're unkind, you beat up on people to get where you are, all of those things. Really, the truth of this, and listen carefully, is that you can be spiritual, loving, kind, happy, caring, creative, artistic, generous, and did you hear that word? A-N-D, not O-R. A-N-D, very, very wealthy. And I know each and every one of you knows donors who are very, very wealthy, and they are kind, and they are spiritual, and they are generous, and they are creative, and they are loving. It's not an either-or. It's an and. Now, are there wealthy people who are jerks? You bet. You bet. And I have a wonderful quote I was going to say for the end. Let me see if I can find it now. I would love to find it. Here we go. This is something from, "Money is neither my God nor my devil. It is a form of energy that tends to make us more of who we already are, whether it's greedy or loving." That's by Dan Millman. So money amplifies who you already are at your core. It doesn't make you that. Finally, and this is the most detrimental one, absolutely the most detrimental one of all, I have some resentment towards extremely wealthy people. If you agreed with that at all, take note and really think about this. You cannot have anything in your life that you resent. What you resent, you push away. What you resent, you put messages out to the universe. You put messages out to God. You put words out. You put actions out. You make decisions around. Anything you resent, you push away from you. Don't resent wealth. Don't resent wealth. And one of the things I've been taught as a tool, it's, and I find it helpful, is if I see somebody in a beautiful, beautiful home, and I feel it, I can feel it coming, that little twinge, that little bit of, oh, boy, I wish I had that. Gee, you know, they've really got a beautiful home here. And I can feel it's that twinge of jealousy, that twinge of resentment. And I don't want that. So I say, bless John and bless this beautiful home. Or thank you, John, for living this life of abundant wealth. And thank you, John, for this beautiful home. I thank them and I bless them because this is something I want in my life. This is something I want them to celebrate with me and the major gift they're considering for my organization. I want them to know and I want to feel that I value their wealth. I value their success. I look at, and value is a big word. I have good values around my feelings of wealth and money. I see money as a positive value in their life. Not why them and not me. Why not them and not me, and it can never be me. All of those kinds of self-talk phrases only bring us away from what we're trying to do. So how do we change these programs, these program thoughts? I mean, honestly, we've grown up with them. They're there. When I study with my own coaches, I'm amazed sometimes at the stuff that comes up for me that I just have no recollection of ever hearing or focusing around. The best we can do is really to try to think about those things that are in there. As I went through those statements, which ones really resonated for you? Which ones do you have to work on? Reflect on them. Take some time. Be aware of what that little voice is chattering with you when you are on one of your major donor calls. You might be surprised at that conversation in the background. You might be very surprised at what you're thinking when what's coming out of your mouth is, gee, Mr. Wealthy Person, I'd like you to consider investing in me. Or Mrs. Wealthy Person, I'd like you to consider investing in this. In the background, you're going, boy, they got a lot of money. I bet that they really da-da-da-da-da. What's going on back there? Listen to that chatter. And also be aware that different societies talk differently about money. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that today, but in our world, in North America, money itself, talking about money, has a tinge of rudeness to it. For example, would you ever say to somebody, oh, that's a lovely jacket. What did you pay for it? Oh, what an amazing wedding ring. How much did that set you back? Or would you say, congratulations on that new job. What will your salary be? Did you ever see a small group split a dinner tab? Oh, my goodness. So know that in our society, talking about money is a little awkward. And sometimes I come right out and say that when I'm on a call. You know, one of the things we'll talk about are the variety of different ways that you can invest in our organization. So I want to just be real upfront about something here. We're talking about money. And we're talking about the impact the money has, and money is a way for us to get to this impact. But I know that for both of us, talking about money is a little awkward, don't you think? I've never had anybody say, oh, no, I talk about money all the time. I've had them say, yeah, you know, I deal in money every day, but it's still a little weird somehow. Yes, that's it. So it's helpful to understand our work centers around what the money does. And it can be helpful to state to a prospective giver, you want to make a difference with our organization. Let me share the ways you can help and the investment that's required to make that happen. In other words, always connect the money to the impact. Perhaps after this conversation, you have a little deeper and better understanding about why connecting the money to the impact is important from all of this money stuff we've talked about. It's also why major gift work is a little bit different than the annual fund. You know, annual fund is all about what color should the donate button be so that it gets the most hits. We want to know what triggers our donors to make that quick, you know, I'm going to send $25 to this, I'm going to send $100 to this. If we have the 100 bigger on the donor pledge card than the 50, the 100, the 250, the 500, will more of them select the 100? There are scores of people out there doing scores of research on all of these things to trigger, and I use the word trigger. And if you feel a little bit of manipulation in that, well, it is how direct mail works. The annual fund is different than these major giving conversations we're having. You are on the Artful Asking Success Club, which is all about major donor work. So in our conversations, it's different how we talk about money and how we acknowledge the role of money's life with these very wealthy people. Just wanted to be sure to make that distinction. Sometimes when a giver looks nervous, I even will say to them, I just want to say something to you, Mary and John. You know, today we're talking about the impact you're going to have, but this is talking about money, and I know that might make us a little nervous. Now, I've said this differently about three different times because it's very, very important in your major giving call. Okay, number two, how do you ask for money? And here I just want to say, and I don't know if you've seen it, but I was honored to be asked to be part of the interview in the AFP's Advancing Philanthropy magazine, and the feature came out shortly after the first of the year, I think in about February, with three other really prominent folks who deal in the art of asking. And I got to share this three-sentence ask in the magazine, as well as talk to them about how powerful I think the words we use are, and to get away from cultivation and solicitation and stewardship, and to think about words that not only are more supportive of our donors, but supportive of ourselves. And I want to go on record today as saying that I don't support kind of an internal and an external language, if we can avoid it. Some people will say, well, our profession has a language, and we say cultivation, stewardship, and solicitation. Well, okay, but what comes out of our mouth goes into our heads. And I don't think of myself as a solicitor. In fact, when I hear the word, I see signs on doors that say what? No solicitation. And I don't want to feel all that stuff. So I speak an artful ask. And as we're preparing to speak that artful ask, there are things that have to happen before we get to that point. So let's talk about these briefly. One is this whole idea of values. And now you know from what we've talked about already on this session that money is something that there are a lot of values around. Do people tithe? Do people have experience growing up where their parents were generous or philanthropic? Do their values align with your institution or organization? Do they believe in some of the same basic principles of what should happen from one human being to another? Those core values, and money being one of them, is very, very crucial to their ability to connect with you and your organization in a way that leads to a major gift again and again and again. Are they excited about your mission? Do they really understand it? This relates to, again, a money issue. Your board or your boss says, go talk to those people over on Wealthy Street. They all have the big houses. They got a lot of money. Well, that's a real great qualifier. And certainly, as we look to grow major giving, we need to begin with people who have a capacity to make a major gift. I get that. There's a money measurement involved with determining who are our best prospective givers. But that is just half of the equation. The bigger half, if there's such a thing, is how they feel about our mission. Because for all time, the number one reason people give, and you can look at Penelope Burke's research and you can look at everybody's everything, it's always about do they believe in our mission. So when you're dealing with somebody who has not been connected with you but is wealthy, one of the first things you really have to talk around is, this is what our organization does. How do you feel about that? Where do you feel this fits in making our community the kind of place that you want to live in? We have to get that whole idea around mission. If there's somebody who's been involved with you a long time, it's all about, talk to me about how you feel our mission really changes lives. I'd love to hear your perspective on that. Talk to me about how your experience with our mission has impacted you or somebody you know. Okay? Do they really understand the value that our organization gives to those that we serve? And if you all of these things that I've talked about are kind of related to a measurement proposition. They're values, but it's do I kind of agree or do I really disagree? Where are they at in a 1 to 10 kind of scale about our organization? So these questions, these pre-ask questions and conversations are very important to have. And then I just want to quickly, you know, there's some technical things that we need to take care of. How do we best interact with them? One of the first things I like to ask when I talk to somebody is, what's the best way for me to get a hold of you, get in touch with you? Do you prefer email? Do you prefer, you know, should I leave you voicemail? Should I use your cell? Should I write you a letter? I mean, how do you want me to stay in touch with you? What's the best thing to do? That's one of those first little snippets we need to know. And this isn't just about the ask. This is about all along the way, what sort of communication works best. It's always also interesting to me to talk about what kind of dollars, back to money, what kind of dollars have they invested in other organizations? And how did those other organizations treat them and treat that financial investment? Let me tell you a story. I walked into a beautiful home for a call with a donor who'd given us a $5,000 gift. When I walked in, there was this amazing, I mean, it really was amazing, glass kind of recognition piece. It was a beautiful piece. And I remarked about it. I said, wow, this is really quite the piece. And he said, oh, yes, we remember that night. It was for the XYZ organization, and we were honored as one of the major benefactors of the organization. Now, my little antennas are twitching at this point. They're twitching, my friends, because I'm like, ooh, so he understands being a major benefactor. He gets really being one of these core supporters of an organization. He's done this before. Now, if I'd have left it at that, I would have really gotten the wrong message. Instead, I said, so tell me, Frank, what level of investment did you make to be a benefactor for this organization? Oh, Marcy, it was $10,000. Whoa. So he's given me five, and he has just had all of this pomp and circumstance from another organization and this beautiful piece as well for a $10,000 gift. Changes the conversation, doesn't it? Changes the conversation. Where am I for time? Okay. Do they understand what an endowment is? That's another money conversation. And the whole idea of giving outright, and I've always reacted to an envelope or a phone call compared to now you're talking to me face-to-face, and then taking that to the next level of there are people who endow things so they have this magical impact for all time. Do you understand what that's all about? It may take you two or three calls to just get through what is an endowment and how does it work? And don't think you're going to leave your endowment handout behind and that's just going to fix it all up. Yep, yep or do. Wrong. It's all about examples of how endowments have worked in the past. It's these kinds of numbers have produced these kinds of appreciation. If they start glazing over, it might be a little bit of a conversation you have, and then you go on to other things, and a little bit of a conversation you have again the next time. Or they might be real savvy donors and be all knowledgeable about endowments. Don't get fooled by that, because an endowment in your organization might be handled very differently than an endowment in somebody else's. I had a rude awakening when I left the University of Wisconsin Foundation and started working with a series of different nonprofits as a consultant and found that they treated endowment very differently than we had at the university. An endowment was sort of an investment vehicle for many of them where they put some excess money that they had, but it wasn't set up as being, we're not going to put it in here and never ever take it out. And if somebody gave them an estate gift, some organizations had a policy that those estate gifts went into endowment. Some organization had a policy that, boy, if that estate gift was not designated as being long-term endowment giving, what a windfall for the operation fund. And so there's some ideas or some beliefs around how endowments work that vary from organization to organization. You need to know what you're talking about there. The other thing that's really important is how do they make their giving decisions? Because we've just spent some time talking about your feelings around wealth and money. Well, if you're working with a couple, and oftentimes you are, and oftentimes you're working with a woman instead of a man, or oftentimes you might be working with a family foundation and you've got a whole room full of people. All of those people have different money mindsets. All of those people come to the table with their own experiences and enlightenments and prejudices and knowledge around money and what an investment does and how they feel about it. All of these things are open for your education to them and your ability to not change their mind in a manipulative way, but help them understand that they have different options. Right? So how do they make those giving decisions? You need to know that. And you need to know how you can either have one person that helps you share your materials with the rest or share these conversations with the rest, or that you need to be sure you have a chance to talk to everybody who's involved in this giving decision one way or another. I hope that one of the things you're hearing out of this is, oh, it's not just, hi, John, thanks for the appointment today. How about $1 million? Right? You're going to miss a lot of steps if you do that. And chances are you're not going to get the gift. That's why, and I'm not saying it takes you 6 or 9 or 20 or 80 calls. I'm saying it takes you enough calls to cover these important steps that have to happen before you speak that ask. How do they want to be recognized? This is a really important question. Because we immediately go to, you know, my plaque's bigger than your plaque. One of the things that's happening out there, and I'm sure that you're all running into this, is more and more often we're getting people who want to be anonymous. They don't even want to be mentioned for their gift. And there's a few things that are going on there. One is if they're put up as having made a major gift, there are going to be 85,000 other nonprofits that are going to be on their doorstep tomorrow. And they don't want all of that kind of attention. It's really kind of sad because I think it's harder for us to have some of these donors speak out and be ambassadors on our behalf in a public way. Did you hear that? In a public way. But donors do want our appreciation. So I think the word is wrong. We talk about recognizing donors like it's something that we bestow on them with some kind of a tangible act. They get a plaque, they get the room named, whatever, but we recognize them and we talk to them about your gift at this level gives you this sort of recognition. And for some donors, it's very, very important. There's a fellow in town, his name is Jack Lucier. He's a great friend of mine, he's a great person. He has the Lucier YMCA Center, he has the Lucier Heritage Center, he has the Lucier Teen Center, I'm missing a few. There's the Lucier Silver By Memorial High School, and I'm not thinking of the name. Great program. And Jack likes to have his name on things. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's a wonderful way that we can thank and show our appreciation in this way to someone who's provided a major investment. It's all good. But it's not for everybody. So it's really important that we understand. And I'm also saying we've got to talk past the, you know, how would you like to be, shucks, you know, I don't need any of that. Right, I get that. There's especially in the Midwest, but for many people, there's a humility around giving where they're not comfortable with that kind of thing. We need to talk past that and really understand, is it access to certain people that can give them up, keep them up to date? Is it your personal attention in a certain way? Is it your time? Is it an older woman who enjoys your visits and the best appreciation you can give her is a regular visit? Is your time? These are things that we have to look at. We have to look at their history with us. We have to look at the specific projects and programs, and this is really important, and say to them, this impact is accomplished at this with this investment. This impact is accomplished at this investment. Now, I'm using the word impact. You would have vibrant options for giving. You would have those things that are necessary in your organization to move it forward towards your strategic plan. And you talk to them about why these are the areas that people can invest in. You notice that I'm working hard to work around the word needs because I'm not really wanting to be needy. And I'd rather have opportunities for their investment than needs, than things we need. I'm trying to get away from being needy because I don't think that resonates with really wealthy people. They understand their problems and they want to see your unique and thoughtful ways that they can address these issues with their investment. So be sure you attach dollars to impact. Okay, now, I use and have used for all times, and I am a vibrant personality, as you know, and I easily kind of go from here to there, and I'm not a straight line kind of person. I'm sort of a wavy line kind of person. I wing it. I've been on stage all my life. I'm very spontaneous. But when it comes to speaking that ask, my friends, I know exactly what is going to come out of my mouth. I have written it. I have rehearsed it. And I have memorized it. Now, there are other folks in this field that will say, you know, you do this or you do that. Or if they say this, then you say that. And it's more of a dynamic process. Wonderful. That's great. If it works for you, wonderful. I want to know exactly what's going to come out of my mouth. And I have used the same three-sentence process, whether I'm asking for $25, well, usually not for $25, but maybe, or $25 million. My point being that it doesn't matter the size of the gift. I've always used this. And I'll also tell you that it doesn't matter if I'm asking for a gift of money or a gift of service or a gift of time. I've used it to ask people to be on boards. I've used it to ask people to agree to being a story in our publication. So it's not even just about money, but that's where it grew out of. So these, what's important is, first off, these three sentences, and this is from my good friend Harvey McKinnon out of Canada, who is a brilliant writer, says, can be no longer than 17 words. So none of these three sentences can be longer than 17 words. You bestow sincere honor or praise. You talk about the special connection to this particular ask, the connection to this ask, okay? So the investment for impact. You're considerate. You ask for their consideration. You state a specific amount and a specific purpose, and then you are quiet. Shh. You say nothing. Now, there are a couple other things here. There's no room in an ask for the word I or we. It's not about us. It's about them. So if you're coming around to, I would like you to consider, or I want you, or we want you, or we ask you, it's not about you. There's no room for we or I in an ask. Sure, you can have it in your conversations, but this is your ask. This is just the words that come out of your mouth for an ask. So you have, and then some kind of compliment, sincere compliment, on their connection or service or past giving or status in the community. You understand, and that is that special connection to the gift that you're asking for. Would you consider a gift of blank, for or to blank? And that's a specific use, and then you're quiet. Let me give you a couple of quick examples. So, John, you have been with us from the start. You understand creating an endowment will make us and the work we've done sustainable. Would you consider a gift of $100,000 for our endowment? Mary, you have been vital to the work we've done in inner city Milwaukee. You understand our learning centers in strategic neighborhoods provide help where it's needed most. Would you consider a gift of $50,000 to construct a center in neighborhood X? I'm just making these up kind of as I go here. Let me get a Gladys and Paul. You have had a passion for preserving our natural resources and been a vital piece of our leadership team. You understand that locking down land is one way we can assure these resources will be here for generations to come. Would you consider a gift of $100,000 to purchase Tract X and preserve it? So you know your organization so much better than I do. I'm winging this here, but I'm winging it according to a formula. And it's just so important to remind people. And that first line, you want that first line to maybe be a little bit better than I just did it in terms of, you know, that's why I put it an adjective, but it's got to be an adjective that's believable. So in other words, if John's been on your board for 6 years and he missed half the meetings, you wouldn't say, John, you've been a magnificent member of our board of directors. Frankly, no, he's not showing up, right? It's got to be authentic. It's got to be authentic. It might be something that, you know, it could be, John and Gladys, you have been leaders in our community in so many ways. So maybe this is someone that's not as directly connected with what you do. You understand that our community needs to be the kind of place that attracts business and supports its citizens. Would you consider a gift of X for this shelter that'll help those most in need? I mean, you really have to think about who you're talking to and how they're connected to the mission. I hope that's been helpful. Okay, in the last couple of minutes that we have, I want to just leave you with wanting the money, wanting the money. My third section here is wanting the money. So you've been hired to be a fundraiser, to bring in money. Yet, in our heads, my friend, there's a really fine line between wanting the money and wanting the donor to accomplish what they want to do. We've been hired to bring in money. At the end of the day, you're not going to be asked, sadly, you're not going to be asked how satisfied are your donors. You're going to be asked how much money did you bring in. So everything around us pounds on us. Where are you at getting the money? Where are you? Did you meet your numbers? Now, I don't agree with a lot of that, and I work to have metrics that are focused more on our activity than those dollar signs. But I know that at the end of the day, our job is to bring in money. So it's hard in our own heads to balance this sense of, are they going to give me the gift? Am I going to get the money? With, am I really doing what makes John and Gladys most satisfied? Let me tell you, that's an internal struggle that's never going to go away, but it's an internal struggle you have to deal with again and again and again and again and again. And I want you to understand the best way to manage this is put yourself in that donor's shoes. And here are some questions I want you to consider. From your donor, now you're your donor. You are somebody with wealth, and somebody has come to talk to you about investing in their organization. They say to themselves, do you, fundraiser, only want to see me when you want to talk about money? Is that the only thing our relationship is built on? Do you be nicey-nice to me and try to have this friendy-friendy business, but you really only want to talk about my money? That is something that is going to happen based on your level of this internal dialogue. Do I want the money? Do I want them to have the gift that is most meaningful for them? And where you come out in that balance on any given day, how you manage that internal dialogue, how you manage your own feelings and thoughts and emotions. Can you ever say thank you without asking? I got a wonderful call from the University of Wisconsin. It was a student, and it was marvelous. It said, Marcy, we just are calling to thank you for your gifts to the university this past year. The call went on for a few minutes. I'm Sophie, and I'm a major in this, and I do that, and this is what I've had. And I was just enamored with this message. I was listening to every word. I could just feel myself lengthening and growing and being so happy that I made that gift, and it was wonderful. And the last thing she said was, and we hope we can count on your support next year. And I just felt deflated. It was like, oh my gosh, this was all about just saying we want more money. And it erased all of the good she had done. It really was tragic. I would have thought that the UW would have been a little smarter about this. Say thank you. Shut up. Not every single time, but at least have some thank you messages that don't always come with your handout. Okay, will you be as interested in me if my money situation changes? So there were people that I talked with in 2008, 9, 10 when the economy changed, and I talked to them even though I had heard that some of them had fallen on hard times. And there were several that started the conversation with with Marcy. I'm not quite sure why you wanted to meet. I don't know if you've heard. And I said, wait a minute. I said, you know, I just called today to let you know what's going on. I want to have a conversation about what our organization is doing. And your support of us in the past is what's allowing us to do this. And you should be enjoying what's going on in this organization now. I'm not here to talk to you about another gift. Can I make that really clear at the start? And you could just see this relief flood over them. Now, let me tell you, who are they going to invest in when the time comes and they're back on their feet? Their feet. You know who it is. The next question, is our friendship based on the fact that I have money and you want it? So you really have to think about how what you say and do feels and rests on your donors. I think that's really important. So let me close with a few quotes. This is from Oprah. I love Oprah's quotes. I could have had all of my ending quotes could have been from Oprah. I just think she's wonderful. I'm a big Oprah fan. I know not everybody is, but I am. So she says, everyone wants to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. When I had money, everyone called me brother. That's a Polish proverb. Capital, as such, is not evil. It is wrong. It is its wrong use that is evil. Capital in some form or other will always be needed. That was by Gandhi. I am grateful for the blessings of wealth, but it hasn't changed who I am. My feet are still on the ground. I'm just wearing better shoes. That's another quote from Oprah, who, of course, has 300 pairs of shoes. I'm grateful for the blessings of wealth, but it hasn't... Money is neither my God nor my devil. It's a form of energy that tends to make us more of who we already are, whether it's greeting or loving. So please remember, my friends, we become what we think about. Consider how you feel about money and wealth. Keep what serves you and respects your donor. Happy spring. Thanks for being part of this honorable and noble profession. Until next time, this is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Something good is going to happen to me. Thank you for honoring me with your time. Have a great week. Bye-bye now.